You're listening to Pull the Line, a tattooer-created podcast about respect and tradition.
Welcome back to Pull the Line, tattooer-created podcast about respect and tradition. Today, it is just going to be Lisa and I with our very, very special guest, Micah Gunderson. Is that how you say your last name?
Yeah, you got it.
Sick. Just wanted to make sure. Rich is out for this one. He might pop in later, but we'll see. So for anybody that doesn't know, Micah, where do you live and where do you work?
Where do I live? I live in New Franklin, Wisconsin. So I live in the burbs in the country. But I work and own Northern Tide Tattoo in De Pere, Wisconsin.
Nice.
I didn't know you were out in the boonies.
Cool. Yeah. We moved there about 2 years ago from Green Bay. So
Do you like it better out in the boonies than in the city?
I love it. I mean, I grew up out of here and I love the commute too. It used to bother me when I used to have to commute to work, but now I really enjoy it. It's a little downtime, you know, before the chaos.
How far do you drive?
I'm just like 25 minutes. It's not too bad.
Oh, nice. That's solid.
Yeah. It's the perfect amount.
How long have you been tattooing for?
You know, I started a whole little timeline today, just thinking back, getting prepped for this. So I think it's 13 years now already. I started in 2011, March of 2011. So yeah, I think it'll be 14, right? March.
Wow. Who did you apprentice under?
I had a super, it's kind of long and complicated, to be honest with you. How much of the story do you want? How much time do we got? Do you want to hear the whole thing?
Go for it.
So I first got into it, I guess, when I was in high school. There's a shop here in Green Bay that I kind of got my foot in the door. I worked down the street from it. So I kind of started hanging out there, started getting tattooed, asking questions, the whole thing. I started hanging around there through high school. And then I was going to start my apprenticeship there and things just didn't work out. So I've always kind of been, you know, I wanted to get out of Green Bay. I had to do something.
So very last. Ask what shop it was, or okay.
You
don't have to say.
Yeah,
I'll ask you. I'll ask you a messenger personally later.
Yeah, I would totally. Okay. I'll tell you all the details. And it's not like there's no bad blood. Super, it's all good. It's just, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways, I ended up moving to Madison, like last second, to go to school, just for something to do. I knew I had to do something. I always wanted to tattoo, but I moved to Madison and went to school for illustration and graphic design very briefly. And then while that whole thing was unfolding, I dropped out of school, to make a long story short. And one of my best friends from high school, her cousin was married to Don from Big Guns. And Don was opening up a shop in Madison and needed somebody to run it. So there I was. Started tattooing in Madison at Big Guns on the corner of State and Francis.
Because you did learn already how to do it in Green Bay. You just weren't doing it.
I didn't like learn how to do it. I learned a lot of things, like a lot. I pretty much did everything other than tattoo, I felt like, you know? Like, I feel like I was there for quite a long time, you know? And that's kind of what ended it, was they're like, okay, now this thing needs to be more formal. Kind of need to start over. And one of the other guys there, who's kind of like my actual mentor there at the time, was like, nah, dude, that's not how it goes. So you should just keep on keeping on. So that's when I ended up moving.
I thought Big Guns was an Oshkosh.
Oh, there were so many locations. There was.
Yeah, I thought it was an Appleton.
Yeah. Appleton, Fond du Lac, Madison. I think there was one in Beaver Dam at one juncture.
Oh, wow. A couple of the dudes from the Oshkosh one actually just tattooed at a benefit rally for me last month.
That's awesome. That's cool.
Was Nick one of them?
I think. He's really good friends with my mentor, but to be completely honest with you, I don't really remember the names of the dudes that were there just because I was still pretty fresh out of the hospital. Like, I was like a week out of discharge, so... I know Chops was there. Chops was there, and whoever his mentor is, which I think might have been Nick, because he's good friends with my mentor, but I'm just not certain.
If I would put money on it, I bet you he's a pretty solid dude. I like that guy a lot.
Yeah, I've heard great things.
Is that who tattooed Billy's chest at that little convention? At the Dragon Foot? Was he at the little beer convention?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
I bet you that was him. But I only tattooed in Madison, I don't know, maybe a couple months, like 3 or 4 before I moved to the Appleton location. And then I was there very briefly from like May to November. And then that's when I moved to Marquette, Michigan, and then worked under Dan Pemble at Sacred Tattoo.
Ah, oh, Dan Pemble. Yeah. I've worked at convention before. Yeah, he does great work. He's great.
How long were you over in Michigan for then?
So then that was like my longest. That's why I was like kind of like this long, like little bits and pieces of apprenticeships. But then that was like my longest, like diamond in. Over 4 years I was in Marquette.
Oh, wow. Okay. So at this point, by the time you get there, you had already been through an apprenticeship, or you were still like picking up pieces along the way?
I would like to say that I was officially, I guess, through an apprenticeship, but it was still like picking up pieces for sure. That's where I like to say I really like started to hone my skills, you know?
Yeah. Well, I suppose isn't that typically what the first like 5 to 10 years is after an apprenticeship anyways, is still kind of just being an apprentice.
Still learning.
I still learn stuff. I've been doing it 22 years, 23 maybe. And I'm still learning new stuff all the time, especially with all the changes. You know, things change. So
for sure. I say the second you stop learning things is the day you might as well quit, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious, just because you mentioned going to school, I feel like it's not super uncommon, but not super regularly that you hear tattooers talk about having attended school. I think you said you only attended briefly, right?
Yeah, about a year and a half. And like I said, the only reason I went was because I'm like, okay, I'm not going to stay here with all the – I guess I was still more stuck in the high school mentality, right? You're like,
mm-hmm.
thinking of all the kids you went to high school with, and like, I'm not sticking around here, you know, getting stuck in the wheel, the cog of life here. So I just wanted to keep on moving, you know? And my cousin, Madison, so I moved in with her. And, yeah, it was a super, super great time.
I'm curious, do you think that – or I should say – do you think / how do you think that helped in your ability and your talents in tattooing? I'm just curious because I had done graphic design through high school, but that was a part of how I had gotten my apprenticeship to begin with. And it took me a while to realize how that helped me prepare for being able to like be a tattooer in little ways.
Yeah, I think some of the biggest things, you know, there's a lot of classes that at the time I thought were useless, right? But now looking back, I was like, you know, those are actually really beneficial, from color theory to even typography, where you had to just literally just, you know, hand tracing letters, all those type of things, a lot of hands-on, you know, for the illustration part of it. So all those things translate right into tattooing.
I know you use Photoshop is huge, like Photoshop, because that leans right into Procreate. They operate so similarly. I don't know if you use Procreate, but that's what I use like for all of my work. So
I do use Procreate a ton. And it was funny because, like I said, obviously first things first being, like I said, I didn't want to stay here in Green Bay. But then the next thing, I was super into music. And just like that Circus Survive poster you have there, I'm like, how are these guys doing those t-shirts? That's what I want to do. If I can't tattoo, I want to do that. So I was like, all right, this program would be perfect. So I learned a lot of important things in school, but none of which is still how to make a cool t-shirt like that.
That's so funny. I have a band, and we have only started doing stuff really this year, at least publicly this year. And I didn't want to be the one to make our t-shirts.
Yeah.
Cause like all the dudes were like, oh, well, I mean, it's cool to have like a traditional style t-shirt design, but like, I want more than that. And I was like, okay, well then you motherfuckers can buy other designs. And now it turns out I'm actually just the one that makes all of our t-shirts. And, what'd you say?
So now you told those guys, see, you needed me all along.
Right. I'm like, okay, yeah, how much more expensive would this be? No, that is funny though.
so you did some like graphic design stuff in school?
Yep. Yeah, I did that in screen printing.
Okay. Lisa, did you ever go to school?
I went to art high school. But no college. I went to Milwaukee High School of the Arts for my freshman year of high school. So I learned a lot there. But then when I moved up to Green Bay and started doing started going to high school here, I took like every art class, you know, and I took Photoshop class or graphic design. There was actually just a class to learn Photoshop and Illustrator. And that, I think that helped a lot. Like, you know, like I said, it leans into Procreate, and I am airdropping things from my tablet to Photoshop all the time because Procreate is not great with text. Like, let's just be real. It's like Photoshop just kills Procreate when it comes to lettering. So
for sure. Yeah. And unfortunately, I went to such a small high school. I went to Luxembourg Casco that we had none of those programs. Like, things would have probably been so different if we had access to, like you said, classes like you did, you know?
I'm curious, just because I guess we didn't get into the meat and the potatoes of like your initial like launch into finding an apprenticeship. What was finding an apprenticeship like for you? Like, how did you approach getting it?
Just the traditional way. Like I said, I was getting tattooed. I was using every paycheck I had to get tattooed. So actually, after getting tattooed a while, you know, kind of earning that a little bit of respect of, all right, this dude's getting a lot of tattoos, like spending a lot of money here. Then I kind of started asking questions, you know what I'm saying? I started poking around as far as that went.
And so stated it in my shop. He was a regular. And then we were hiring a receptionist and he applied for that job. So I was like, I'm not taking any more apprentices ever again. And then his artwork was really cool. And I was like, all right, you're the last one.
That's funny. Yeah, that's what I tell everyone to do. That's what happened with me too. I mean, I feel like sometimes I'm sure it happens in other ways, and you know, right place, right time. But I think if you're really reaching to work somewhere that's not just going to exploit you, and you really want to make like an organic connection with someone, like create a rapport, hang out, you know.
Agreed. That's what we always say too. Sam, the kid that I taught how to tattoo, the one and only apprentice I've ever had, was the right time, right place, right time kind of thing. You know, we never met prior. He never got tattooed. I mean, he did have some tattoos from Big Guns actually. But we met at a men's conference through church, and all of his little friends were there, and he was tattooing out of his mom and dad's house. And I was like, if he can do those kind of tattoos out of his mom and dad's house, he can tattoo.
Yeah. That's awesome that you saw the potential in him with that, not, you know, not just turned him away for that.
For sure.
I mean, cause a lot of artists don't want people that have tried teaching them or started teaching themselves. I hear that a lot. Like, then you have to unteach them a bunch of bad habits and then start teaching. So it's cool that you gave him the chance.
Especially nowadays. Right. I mean, there's much of that, people teaching themselves, and
I know. It's actually a question that I'm going to ask you about later. Once Michael gets through his little list of questions he's got.
I'm just kind of bouncing around. I don't have like a super list or anything like that. But I was one of the things on the preparation list that I had sent you that I was curious about was the sacrifices thing, like to be an apprentice, what kind of sacrifices did you have to make? Did you work through it, or were you at home for it? Or sorry, I kind of bounce around a little bit, but
no, that's okay. Sorry, go ahead, Lisa. Did you have something?
No, what I was going to say was not important. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I pretty much gave up everything. Like I said, I was tattooing, and there's nothing that was going to stop me. Even from when I left Green Bay, like I said, I did go to school, but that was never the end goal. It was like, how can I tattoo? So even when the second I got, like, moved to Houston, I got even plugged into a shop there, started hanging out with those guys, started building a good relationship with them, just getting tattooed a ton. So I was just even on the side, you know? So yeah, I just feel like I gave up literally everything, and I moved around a ton, obviously, to continue to get where I am today. So like I said, starting at Madison, moving to Appleton, and then the next step was moving to Marquette, you know? And then just
Do you see yourself doing this like for the rest of your life? Like, is this it? Or do you have like a, maybe someday I'll do something else sort of thing?
I mean, I have so many hobbies, but to be honest with you, Lisa, I put all my eggs in one basket. Like, so many people are like, you know, I can build cars or I can weld. I'm like, that's cool, but I can tattoo and that's like it.
Yeah, same. I'm ruined for any other field because now I'm a total brat. Like, I can't go back to having a regular job.
Just a little bit off topic, but during the whole COVID situation, my good friend Carly owned a macaroon bakery. So I baked some cookies for a little while. That was kind of fun.
That's sick. It's funny, Lisa, on your note of like being ruined for other industries. I was just telling Kirsten the other day, I was like, man, I feel like if I, for some fucking god awful reason, ever went back to like a typical 9 to 5, I would definitely get fired from somewhere super quick because I don't have a filter anymore and I don't have a tolerance for bullshit or anything like that. Not that I don't think I'm a hot-headed person or anything, but I would, you know, managers like to be followed, not spoken to on a level playing field. So I mentioned that to her the other day. I was like, I'd be fucked. We would be fucked if I didn't have this.
Dude, same, because like our shop, there's so much roasting. It's like it's just constant. Like everybody is just, I would just be insulting people and then they would not be understanding it.
Be in trouble with HR all the time.
What would you say?
I said just in trouble with HR all the time.
Yeah.
Right? Just giving people a hard time, uncomfortable in the work environment. It's just a whole thing nowadays.
Like, wait, you can't smack your coworker's butt? That's like not okay.
Yeah, so we heard reports that you were asking everybody which of two animals would kill the most fifth graders in the fastest way, gorillas or bears. We don't really like that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know what I would do. People, you know, sometimes ask, like, if you weren't tattooing, what would you do? I don't know.
Damn.
I think if I wasn't tattooing, because I do think about this sometimes, because it's hard on the body and on the mind, I think, after a while. And I think I'd want to stay in the field. You know, like, I'd want to, like, do reception for the shop, maybe, like, run it or something. I don't think I'd want to not be in the industry. If I couldn't tattoo anymore, I'd probably just take a more managerial role or something.
For sure, at least be a part of it, right?
Mm.
Agreed.
What would you say is the vibe of your shop?
We kind of go by the phrase Midwest Aloha, and I would like to think that that's the whole vibe. Just bringing, you know, Hawaii to the Midwest and just those island vibes, as you know, you love it too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we try to just keep it, you know, real chill and, yeah.
Cool.
Island vibes.
What kind of tattooing do you, I hate to say the word specialize in, because I feel like, especially a lot of people that are 10 plus years in, they typically try to have a good hand in multiple fields, but what kind of work do you enjoy doing?
The two things I try to stick primarily to is traditional, I guess, but with my own spin on it. I really prefer to use bright colors. I mean, just like a lot of, you know, like Mike Malone or certain other, you know, people from the past. And then Polynesian tribal, you know, those are like my two things that I really try to stick to.
Yeah, you have like the bold lines, the simplicity, the like, you know, the structure of traditional, but then you like have your own palette that you just, you know, brought in. And I think that it's cool. It's unique. It's your own.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I try to, just try to do my own thing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I forgive me if I'm mistaking this, but like a week or two ago, didn't you post like a chess panel Polynesian thing that you like drew on?
Yeah. All the Polynesian I do is drawn right on to fit the body. I try to keep it, you know, obviously I don't know all the rules, but I try my hardest to keep it true to the craft and give it my most amount of respect I can. So I try to draw it all on and yeah.
Yeah, totally. I saw that piece and I was like, what the fuck? I can't even like wrap my brain around drawing that on.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I don't do Polynesian either, so same.
What kind of and this is I like kind of tossing this out there just to see sort of the similarities that we all have in this vein, but what kind of changes to your mental health do you think tattooing brought in?
I think the biggest things, as far as like mentally, I think it's the stress. I think that's like number one, as far as that goes, as far as affecting my mental health, you know what I'm saying?
I think people assume that tattooing is just this fun, like, happy-go-lucky job where you just can, like, fuck off and, like, be with your friends, but they don't really realize the weight that you carry when you are not allowed to make a mistake every single day. Like, that takes a toll on you, I feel like, after a while. Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to say
No, I prefer that you do. Yeah, I think you nail it right on the head. I think that's exactly that. I think we have the greatest job in the world, and we're very blessed to do it. But, yeah, people don't exactly understand what all goes into tattooing if you're trying to take it at a serious level. You know, I would say tattooing, you get from it what you put into it, right? If you want to do, you know, those small things and walk-ins, and that's great. You know, there's a time and a place for that. But if you're trying to do these custom things and to be on every day, it's a whole different thing, you know, especially while running a shop.
Yeah,
totally. I was just talking to my fiance earlier and yesterday, where there's someone that we know who was pretty close in our lives at one point, who has been very vocal about wanting to become a tattooer, and I sort of tried to give this person a nudge in the right direction by telling them what I tell everyone with how to get an apprenticeship, and then I also went out of my way to teach this person how to paint flash, like spit shade. Yep. Which they did absolutely nothing with. And her and I were talking, and my fiance and I, and it's, I think people really like the idea of getting paid and making art, but they don't understand what it means to get paid to make art. And I think tattooing and making art are kind of two separate sorts of things. I went into a rant about it on one of our episodes, and I don't want to get into it too far again. But obviously they work together. I mean, you can't have one necessarily without the other to, you know, some degree to tattoo. You kind of have to make art to at least some degree in some kind of way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think just like you said, Lisa, a lot of people think that it's, you know, just a happy-go-lucky job, which sometimes it is. You know, sometimes it's just like, wow, this is fucking awesome. But it does come with a lot of weight. Comes with a lot of responsibility. I mean, aside from just art too, I mean, we're doing topical surgery on people, essentially. Like, that's a fucking gigantic deal.
Sometimes you can do everything right and the customer can do everything right and the person can still have a really crunchy, gnarly heel, and, you know, that's another stressor that you have to deal with. Like, sometimes going on internally in their body and they just have a shitty heel, and if it's the wrong person, they can blame you, and then that's a lot of stress as well, so...
Yeah, it's kind of never ending as far as stressors, to be honest with you, right? That list is extremely long.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many people that I know that started tattooing that were phenomenal tattooers that just couldn't do it any longer for the same thing, you know? They're like, this isn't the end goal. I just can't handle the stress.
Yeah. It's a nightmare to me sometimes to think about not having tattooing in my life. And maybe this is, so to clarify, I've only been tattooing 4 years. A part of why we're doing the show is because there's kind of like a really large dynamic between me, Lisa, and Rich, with, you know, the different amount of years between us.
Yeah, he's the old schooler, I'm the middle, and he's the new. So we look at the industry from the perspectives of three people coming in at very different times.
I can't imagine my life without this, especially recently, like with the accident that I went through. I mean, the tattooing community stepped in like super quick and super hard to help me out with that. And it's unlike anything else. I mean, if I was still working on semi trucks or working in food, or at one point I sold puppies before this, like if I was still in any of those fields,
wait a minute, you sold puppies? Fuck.
Yeah, it was horrible. I sold puppies. I sold puppies for Petland. It was bad. The worst kind of job for the worst kind of people. And yeah, I would just be so.
It's okay. You've changed, right? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'd be so fucked right now if I didn't have tattooing, you know. And I have nightmares about that.
It's truly amazing, the community in tattooing. You know, first and foremost, other tattooers alike, but then also just the people that we have the privilege of tattooing. It's amazing, like you said, the community that is around you, you know.
Yeah. The clients and the connection with clients too, in particular, are it's really special. I was talking to a nurse of mine about it in the hospital, like just over a month ago. And I was telling her about how one time I had tattooed a lady whose daughter had just committed suicide like a month beforehand. And like, it was at first, it was very, you know, it was just business as usual. And then she was talking to me about some of the last things that her daughter did and some of the ways that she had known that her daughter had felt. And like, all of a sudden here I was in the middle of this tattoo crying with this woman, like holding her grief with her. And like, it sometimes that sucks because it's like, I wasn't prepared for this when I woke up this morning. But at the same time, like, can you really ever be prepared for that? That's what makes it so special, is to be able to sit there and hold these things with people and not only, you know, hear them and show them that their grief is seen and that it's heard, but to also sometimes partake in it and also have your heart broken with them. And at the same time, give them a permanent fixture to, you know, remember whatever sentiment it is. It's so crazy. That's, I mean, doing a tattoo is not necessarily magic. It's physics, you know, but there is magic to doing a tattoo. It's crazy.
Yeah, I really believe that it's an exchange of energy, and you take people's pain and you take it like into your energy field and kind of hand it back to them, calmed down a little bit. I think doing a 50-cent piece size tattoo where the person's freaking out the whole time can be way more exhausting than outlining a sleeve in a day where the person sits like a rock. And it's because you're feeling what they're feeling and they're panicking, you know,
yeah.
To some extent.
100%. Yeah. All the things, right. I mean, yeah, it's crazy. Like I said, the trust that with still within us, and then, yeah, the good and the bad, right. We're like therapists for sure. You know,
mm-hmm.
You know what though? I always step in when clients say that to me.
Nah, we're on it. I'm like, absolutely.
I feel, and there is like a therapeutic sense to it, and it kind of like organically comes, but like I tell all my clients how important it is to actually have a therapist. Not that it's always feasible. You know, I know it's very hard to find a good therapist and to be able to fiscally like retain one, I guess. But I'm always like, dude, trust me, you don't want me as your therapist. My therapist knows that I'm fucked up.
I mean, that's a whole other topic for a whole other day, but therapists are usually the most fucked up people. Like, just saying.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Listen to them, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course. Sorry, I didn't mean to interject and sound like a dickhead. I just...
No, you were fine. I'm just... My best friend's a therapist, and she's bad shit. So, yeah. I mean, they're crazy, too.
Yeah. Lisa, can I steal one of your questions that you had?
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
So obviously you said, tallying everything up, you're at about 14 years in here now. And this is a pretty broad question, but from what you've seen, how has the tattoo industry changed? Like, what have you noticed in when you first started tattooing until now that has really been the biggest difference?
I mean, I think this is going to be a little bit of a lame answer because I'm sure a lot of people would say the exact same thing, but obviously technology, like everything else. And the biggest thing of technology being social media and websites and other things, you know, I was lucky enough, like I said, I was tattooing almost 14 years. And I got into it when I was 18. So I caught the very tiny bit of the tail end of what things used to be, just a little bit. Like I remember the only source really being magazines, you know, like I got stacks of magazines from that time, still buying them, you know. And I remember more and more tattoos being available on Google. And I remember sitting at the shop signing up for Instagram, you know. It's pretty crazy. So I think those are obviously the most obvious changes, but, you know, it's kind of the truth. That's, I think, the biggest thing is, I mean, technology in tattooing changes, sure, a little bit, you know, machines, rotaries, but those have also been around forever, you know. So I think just the way that people see tattoos, you know.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that that's been proactive for tattooing?
I think we can use Instagram, or if you want to use like TV, right? TV tattooing. I always say it's kind of like a double-edged sword. I think one great thing it has is brought light to tattooing. So I do think that more people are getting tattooed because it's more acceptable, right? It's like, it's on TV, it's everywhere, right? And also, I think it brings light a little bit to styles. I think that's one big thing that was a really helpful thing, you know, from TV or other things being like, you know, to help the general public realize like certain people do certain things. But then at the same time, the false sense of reality, whether you see that Pinterest tattoo, that was Photoshopped, right? That's not real life or, you know, expectations.
That's not even a tattoo. That's photo. Yeah. That's just a picture put on the skin. Like, yeah.
I totally agree. I've always said, and obviously like I said earlier, I'm still very green to this, but when I've talked to people about like social media and the kind of role that it plays in tattooing these days and TV tattooing, because obviously so many people like hate Ink Master and all those shows, and I've really never watched them. But I can only imagine that they've helped break the stigma around tattoos quite a bit. I mean, there's obviously a lot more people now that want to get tattooed versus, I mean, obviously, you know, 2 or 3 decades ago, but I'm sure even in the last 14 years, there's probably a lot more people that are a lot more open to being tattooed and are a lot cooler with just tattoos being a thing than.
I think it's just a lot more available. Like it's just a lot more mainstream than it used to be in every way, which like leads me to the next question that I brought up, that you actually brought up earlier. How do you feel about that whole, I think it was like a TikTok thing where people are accusing tattooers of gatekeeping the trade? Like, what are your opinions on that?
I didn't see that, but I guess I will just speak to tattooing and gatekeeping. I think like a lot of things, you know, I think that there's a way to go about it in the right way. You know what I'm saying? I guess who am I to say, you know, what's right and what's wrong, but at the same time, you know, so things, I don't know, we owe something to the community and the people that we're tattooing, right? And all these people buy a kit on Amazon and there's nothing holding them back from opening up a shop, right? So there's something about gatekeeping the right way, I think, just to keep the quality of tattoos, especially in your own community, at a certain caliber.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I said this on any episode before, so I apologize if I did, but I think that I personally think the whole thing is ridiculous because, you know, schooling is gatekeeping information. You have to earn it. Like you have to, it's a skilled trade. It's saying that tattooers are gatekeeping the tattoo, how to tattoo is like, it's equivalent to being mad at pilots for gatekeeping how to fly a plane. Like you have to learn, you have to earn your knowledge. You don't just get it for free. It's, I don't know.
No, you're 100% spot on. Yeah, it's all the time and money and hours that we put into it, right? To learning the craft the right way for someone to, you know.
Yeah. I get a little mad when I'm tattooing somebody and they're like, oh, yeah, I do this on the side for fun. And it's like, oh, thank you for just invalidating my life's work in just one sentence.
Yeah, dude.
That new sticker on Instagram, I think it's floating around, that just says tattooing's not a hobby. That couldn't be any more of the truth. You know, like I said, back to the sacrifice question, I feel like I've given my whole life to.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, dude. And I agree. I agree with both of you guys about like there really is. I mean, there's a balance to it, you know. I mean, I came up in a shop that was very much so like an apprentice puppy mill of sorts. And I think they really just wanted someone around to scrub tubes.
You
and
just can't stay out of the puppy mill.
Yeah, I know, right? There's an ongoing theme here of dogs. No, but it, you know, having been brought in with that kind of environment, and I didn't have to pay for my apprenticeship. And that's a whole nother topic that we can get into. But I didn't have to pay for mine. And I lived in the tattoo shop that I apprenticed in for the first like 3 or 4 months with my mentor, because neither of us had anywhere to stay. So we slept in our stations.
Dang.
on air mattresses. And I think that there is a certain level of gatekeeping that can, like, past a certain extent, it's like, okay, well, now you're just kind of like being kind of an asshole. But I think
I think that it's super important to have a strong vetting process. Cause like I said earlier, I mean, and this is really what it boils down to. We're doing topical fucking surgery. Like that's a huge deal. Like people can die from a bad tattoo. I mean, yeah. I know that's a little dramatized, a little, you know,
pulled out. Oh, it's possible though.
It's 100% possible. You could fuck up someone's whole life from.
Yeah, I mean, you could, if you didn't change your needle and you tattooed somebody, like, you know, if you tattooed somebody with AIDS or if it was fast enough in succession, you could totally give somebody a deadly disease. Hepatitis can live in a dry drop of blood for 4 days. That's one little piece that you didn't clean right that could end up in somebody's skin and then hepatitis for the rest of their life. Yeah, it's a serious thing.
Yeah, so. super big deal. It's not a fucking hobby. This isn't fucking tennis. It's not mm-hmm. Call of Duty. Like, there is no taking back. And we all know this, being, you know, having tattooed people and done tattoos where we've like overworked skin or something. Like, there's no taking that shit back. And that's permanent on someone's body. It's not a joke, you know. And I think that it's super important to have a process of like, hey, you don't fucking need to be doing this to people. Like, there's no room here for it, you know.
Yeah, well, there's the right way to go about it, right? So if that's what you really want to do, then put the time and work into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, off topic a little bit. Going back, my apprenticeship was kind of like that. You know, that first one is just kind of thrown into it. It's like, okay, you know these things. Let's see what you got.
I think the trial by fire thing. There's a lot of value that comes from that, but also. And again, this is, you know, everything that I say, obviously I don't really know that much about tattooing, but I feel like although there's a lot of value that comes from that, that could also be a slippery slope, I assume, right? I mean,
slippery slope. Yeah, it could be for sure. And I guess it was just, you know, having met Dan prior, Dan was really doing something that I wanted, and that's how I ended up in Michigan. Like I said, this is going back in conversation, but when you brought that up, kind of reminded me of that. So
I think it is pretty double-edged, like you had said earlier, surrounding like the kind of like publicity that tattooing has gotten in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years. Cause I mean, it, look at TikTok, you know, that's probably the best example of people that think that really just undermine what tattooing is and what it takes to be a tattooer, with all these people that order a tattoo kit on Amazon, like you were saying, and it's like, oh, hey, I'm going to tattoo myself every day for a year. And like, sure, maybe these people most of the time aren't like, they're not giving themselves, you know, staph infections or whatever most of the time. But like, it's still
now, and everything being disposable is so much easier than having when I started, I made my own needles. Like that's how dated I am. Made my own needles. Yeah.
Right.
But I mean, like, it just undermines us, you know, in a lot of ways. It's, I mean, the first question I get from nurses when I'm at the doctor or going somewhere and they find out I'm a tattoo artist is always, oh, do you do it out of your house?
No.
Really?
No. That's surprising that people still ask that question.
Dude, yeah. They must just be judging you. Like, there's something about you in particular. You look like a scratcher.
Yeah.
Nobody ever asked me that.
It's the face tats. That's what it is.
Either.
I don't know what it. I mean, I got. Some
I think it's the beard. Maybe it's the beard, because we both don't have beards and you have one, so that's got to be it.
He's got a fucking beard.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's a bushy giant one.
Yeah, that's what it is. I just look like I tattoo in my house. No, there was a nurse. I have a on the side of my leg. I have a portrait of Bob Saget, and above it, it says cocaine with a question mark. And she was like, why does it say cocaine? And I was like, because Bob Saget fucking loved cocaine. And she was like, really? I was like, yeah. Do you know who Bob Saget was? He wasn't Danny Tanner.
Yeah, he was a dirty motherfucker.
Yeah.
This would be a good time to ask for your funny story.
Yes. So I got so many working in Madison. Like I said, I worked on State Street. It was wild. I was, what was I, like 19 or something, 20, working on State Street, and the shop was open until it wasn't, basically. So like, there's like an endless amount of stories, especially that, I feel like that time in life. But I think one of my favorites that I tell everybody a lot at the shop, I repeat it a lot. This guy comes in one time. Obviously, it was a game day for the University of Wisconsin, a football game. And he came in and he wanted a Badger tattooed, right? But he was wasted, like so wasted. And the dudes were like, I was just running the shop at the time. I wasn't even tattooing. And the guys were like, dude, you're way too drunk. We're not. Ain't happening. So literally I get a text at about 3 a.m. from my boss at that time, right? Being like, hey, like kind of like freaking out, right? That dude broke back into the shop at 3 o'clock, walked in. He knocked everything off the walls because he was like feeling around for the lights, sat in the tattoo chair. And then that's when the cops showed up. He was literally sitting in the chair and they're like, what are you doing? He's like, getting tattooed.
Wow. That sounds like more than just alcohol. Like
I was off the crack. I wonder if you're still telling that story too. Like this one time I got arrested. That was like one of my favorite things. So there's so many, but
I've never been that drunk. What the fuck?
Yeah. And the next day in the whole shop was just, we had to put the shop back just in shambles. And the hole that he broke in, like the window was so small that he like busted and like crawled in. It's pretty impressive.
It's funny. I worked on Ashland Street right by the Economy Inn. That was I like to call it the Ex-Economy Inn. That was a whole bunch of fun.
On Ashland?
Yeah. Okay. When it was Titletown Inc. The amount of just people going through some shit, like, because that's like the cheapest hotel in town, and it was, yeah, we got some sketchy people that would come in and just demand tattoos like we weren't booked, you know. And
yes, go ahead.
The one guy, he was like, he had a tattoo of, you know, some tigers on his arm. It was really faded, and he's like, I just want it recolored. And I'm like, you'd have to redo the lines too. And he's like, damn it, lions, damn tigers.
Hey, were you guys open pretty late there or no?
Oh, this was all during the day.
Yeah.
We were usually closed by 7.
Mm-hmm. Micah, do you know who Eric Berger is?
I don't think.
I used to work at the shop right outside of the Great Lakes Navy base. And he was tattooing this Navy kid once, and the kid was like, yo, I got to use the bathroom. And Berger was like, just give it like 5 more minutes. We're almost done. And then he made a joke. He's like, oh, dude, I have a bib down or a sheet down. Like, you can just pee right here. And the kid got up to go leave, and there was a puddle of piss on his fucking table.
I think we've all had a pisser. I've had a pisser. Have you had a pisser, Micah?
Never.
No, really? Oh, man, I've had a couple. Not me personally, but in the shop. Billy had one. When I was apprenticing, there was one. The lady just had piss-soaked pants, and she just got up, and there's piss on the chair, and piss on the floor around the chair, and she just acted like nothing happened, just completely pretended. Or maybe she was in denial. I don't know. But
wild. I've heard, like you said, I've heard stories like that, but
I had one pass out a couple of years ago, and she passed out, and when I saw her going down, because she had just stood up, when I saw her going down, I reached out to try to grab her, and all I got was a handful of her hair. So I just ripped out her hair. and then she hit her head on the corner of my toolbox, and then just, she's on the ground, and I'm like, help, you guys. So everybody in the shop rushes in, and then she just started just pissing like a fountain. Like, it was like what those fish with the spit, it was like a stream. And the puddle, it was the poor girl.
She had to at least acknowledge that when she woke up, though, or came to. She was like, oh, no, oh.
Yeah, she was very embarrassed, and I felt really bad. And yeah, that was, she never did like come back to get it finished.
I'll have that.
I had a kid at the Cleveland tattoo convention last year, 2 years ago. I think 2 years ago. He passed out and had a seizure on me.
Oh boy.
Like literally like 2 or 3 lines in. And luckily there was a nurse right in front of my booth who helped me out at the time.
Like, you just get this luck with these nurses just being there when you need them.
Nurses and puppies, this guy.
Yeah. Nurses and puppies, dude. I guess that's just like, those are my soul, my spirit animals.
Sorry, nurses aren't animals. I don't mean that. But he was fine. He got up and I got him some food and some protein and some water and a little bit of sugar. And after like 40 minutes, we finished the fucking tattoo and he was all good.
Good to go. Ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Did he like from seizures? Was that like a common thing?
No, he said he'd never had one before. And I was like, all right, well, that's
worrisome. Know what? Oh, Michael, that's normal. Small convulsions when somebody passes out, that's over half of people. It's just a little, your body trying to figure out what to do with the fact that you just went unconscious. It's not an actual seizure.
He curled up. I don't know.
Well, maybe then he did. But definitely like half the people I've seen pass out do kind of a, you know, convulsion thing.
Yeah.
But no, not the curling of up. That is.
But maybe. But I do have to do one, right?
I do have to wrap it up pretty shortly here because I have a dinner date at 6:30. So if there's anything else, any other questions that you guys want, this would be a good time to start.
Yeah, I have one from the list that I'd actually sent you, Micah. And I guess it's kind of a little bit of a two-parter. Hopefully not too long-winded. I'm just curious.
Oh, no, it's okay because I can be a little bit late.
When you first started, I mean, were you a bit of a walk-in warrior? Not, I don't mean that as like in a derogatory term, but
like essentially just. I didn't start taking or being like booked for custom tattoos for years into it, and probably, you know, like, sure, you start building a clientele and you're taking custom pieces, but I mean, as far as like strictly custom things, yeah, I did walk-ins for so many years. I think there's some really good things to learn from that. I think learning how to do and survive in tattooing is super beneficial. You know, you hear a lot of people coming out and they can only do one thing. You know, if trends change or something happens, like, how are you going to continue to tattoo for a living, you know? Yes, the answer is yes. I took walk-ins forever. And I'll still, hey, if you got something, I got the time.
Yeah.
Appointments.
Totally. Okay. Well, then that kind of bleeds into my second one a little bit, being like, how has your career changed over the years? I mean, I know you said that you went years without really getting into that, like, fully, you know, custom, you know, workflow, even though you'll still take walk-ins. How long did that take? And you know, did you, when that really first started to kick in, did you notice like a quick ramp up in developing new clientele from how things had changed? Or?
Yeah, I would say probably right around 8 or 9 years, it kind of went to strictly more just obviously appointments and doing more stuff I wanted to do strictly, you know? And then obviously the ramping up of new people, friends telling friends. And that's kind of where we are now, you know, obviously mostly just by appointment only, doing what I really enjoy doing. I'm very blessed in that regard.
Right on. Okay.
Yeah, I saw that you guys have I saw that on Instagram. You guys have a unique booking system where you just open your books for like a window and then just book to a certain time. And then you do that every couple months or.
Yeah, I'll keep it fast. I think Dan was the one that him and I kind of talked with. I think I borrowed that from him and then we just started doing it. Just because I try not to be booked out 6 months a year. I have a lot of hobbies and a lot of things to do. And I try to just plan 3 or 4 months. So we book one day about, and then that one day fills us up for about 3 or 4 months. And then we just like do it again. That's kind of coming close to time.
That's fucking sick.
Yeah, it works out super well. And obviously, like, if we've got things in progress, I'm not going to make you wait 3 months to book, you know, like, we'll keep the people that are working on big things continuous, but then adding on, you know, like the new stuff. So it works out pretty well.
Is that all of you there that do that, or is it just you? Or
yeah, we all do. The whole shop does it that way.
How many do you guys have?
So it's just Sam and I, and then we just hired Jordan Martinez. He came from New Life in Wausau. So this will be his third week, so real new, full-time.
Awesome. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I started doing a jot. I do jot form. I have jot form, and I do an appointment request form. When I see the appointment request form, I tell the receptionist how much time to book. And then they call it, they book it, and I text them 2 days before and design it. I'm always working for 48 hours out because that way it's like fresh in my head. And it's been working out pretty well for me. I like it that way. So
how long have you been doing that, Lisa?
Just a year, maybe a little less.
Yeah. It's interesting now in today's day and age, the shifting of scheduling and the way things are, you know, like I see so many people I respect, you know, online that are like, books never close. Well, that's great. You know, like, that's cool. But at some juncture, you know, we all have to have lives too. You know, like, how far are you going to be booked out? You know, like I said, every situation is different. You live in a big city.
Honestly, yeah, I think that the further out you book, the more cancellations you're going to have. I don't like to book out more than 3 months. I close my books after 3 months. And then when people do the job form, they see that I'm not accepting clients at this time. They can choose to wait or they can go somewhere else. They can choose another artist in the shop. And I'm fine with all of those. I'm not going to book myself out so far that I don't even, by the time I'm doing the tattoo, the person doesn't have the money anymore, doesn't want it, or like has moved on or died. Maybe they died.
Yeah, for sure.
Dude, I was very surprised to find out, and I'm not sure if he still does this, how far out, I mean, obviously you like traditional, you'd probably appreciate this, how far out Paul Dobelman books. I had hit him up in 2021, if you know who Paul Dobelman is. Sorry, yeah, for should sure. have asked. Yeah, I hit him up in 2021, was just like, hey man, I'm going to be in your area guest spotting. I'd love to get tattooed by you. How far out are you booked? And he was like, I'm booked out till 2023, but I don't ever close my books. And I mean, that'd be cool. Yeah, just let me know when you're going to land and when you're going to leave, and I'll find some time in between there to squeeze you in. And I was like, what the fuck? You're booked. And at that point, that was in 2021. Okay. And I had never met anybody at that point who'd booked out that far. I mean, I'd met people that booked out, you know, 5-6 months, whatever. But I was like, dude, holy shit. And, you know, I don't know if
Rick Karnowski booked out a year still. Like,
that's people, crazy to me.
Yeah.
Greg does too, I think.
Greg? Yeah. Yep. Greg does great work. Oh, we got to get him on the show.
He's a great dude.
Thank you for being a guest.
Yeah, absolutely. And to anybody who has listened this far, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on Pulled the Line.